We've all heard of flyover country, that big stretch of America that separates the East Coast from the West Coast. In 2020, some of the nation's biggest headlines have come from this usually quiet region. George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Jacob Blake, armed militia at the Michigan State House, a foiled kidnapping plot of the Michigan governor. But as important as these stories are, coverage of how the coronavirus pandemic has affected the Midwest has been scarce. Hi, I'm Sarah Cooper. Welcome to COVID Between the Coasts. With research and data resources from the University of Evansville, bilingual reporters from CAPASA Midwest, and public media storytellers spread across seven Midwestern states, we are bringing you stories of how COVID-19 has impacted the lives and livelihoods of Midwesterners. These are the people we cover every day, and these are the pandemic stories you won't hear anywhere else. Thank you for listening. In episode 2, WNIN journalist Steve Berger brings us stories of tragedy, resilience, and systemic failures in one of the Midwest's hardest hit cities.
Well, you know, Sarah, when we envisioned this project, the original plan for it was, how are we going to make sure that we can get all of the states in our region addressed in some way? So you and I split up the states. You took four of them and I took three, mine being Michigan, Minnesota, and Illinois, and I would do some sort of broad overview on them. And we went along that path really until almost October. We began to realize that, yeah, that's a great idea, and we'd done several interviews, but we didn't have anything on Detroit. And Detroit was such an important part of this story, and it's not really been told, and certainly not in the way that we do, and certainly not with data as the basis for that story. That's the reason we went to Detroit, was because in the data it showed that Detroit was very different. It required some on-the-ground reporting. This in itself is a complete segment. And so you and I went back and retooled the series. We pivoted and retooled the series so that we were talking about the three major metropolitan areas, which in fact were presented to us as the areas we should be reporting on by the data anyway. So we retooled the series to report on those three metropolitan areas, and then you were going to handle the rural aspect of it within your piece.
People listening to the series that are not from the Midwest, not from a big city, don't know anything about Detroit like you didn't, what do you want them to take away from your piece?
I would say these people had nothing. Detroit is at such a disadvantage for something like the coronavirus pandemic. They had nothing, they had no defenses, and yet they have such resilience and resourcefulness that they were able to come back. If it was very high in the beginning, many people died. They lost 1,500 people in the first couple of months. I mean, it was horrible in Detroit. But then the curve goes down and it stays flat, whereas most other locations had several spikes. Detroit did not, because they came together after that initial massive blow and figured out how to keep it from continuing, and they did it, and they're continuing to do it. So actually, it's, even though it's a horrible situation for them in the beginning, and we get into that, and it's not necessarily easy to listen to there in the early going in Detroit, but it ends up being almost a triumph because of the way that they responded to it and the way they came back from it.
Like you woke up one morning and the gravity was gone.
From mid-March into April, Detroit was an epicenter for COVID-19 in the U.S. The coronavirus dealt Michigan a massive blow, the punch landing in Wayne County.
By the time it was announced that it was an actual outbreak and then a pandemic, I lost eight people in a week. Eight friends, not family, but eight friends.
It wasn't a fair fight. the median household income in Detroit is less than half the national level. Over a third of the city's residents live below the poverty line. Until recently, Detroit had the dubious distinction of being the poorest large city in America.
Everything in our communities is cheap, fast, not as healthy as it could be.
There was so much we didn't know then about prevention and treatment for COVID-19. That combination of ignorance about the virus and extreme poverty made the outcome predictable.
There was a feeling of guilt. Do I go to work? And if I do, if I get COVID, can I bring it home? But I need to take care of my family at the same time.
Friends died. Family members died. Neighbors died.
I've seen the first time I ever experienced a funeral on Facebook.
The virus was winning. If you want to interview Church of the Messiah pastor Barry Randolph, you might have to appear on his daily radio show.
The filming, and our special guest in the studio today is Steve Berger. Steve, how are you?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
True to his word, though, I was allowed to take up some of the airtime with my questions.
Were there any instances that you remember where someone in the family caught the virus from another family member, and the sorts of stress that causes within a family?
Oh my God, yes. There was a couple of things that we found out. One was a lot of Black and Latino families live in intergenerational families. Mm-hmm. Most people live together, and it's a very strong, tight family unit, not just because everybody love each other, it's out of necessity. So sometimes you may have parents who are working and there is a grandparent who's taking care of the children because that's cheaper. What would happen is one of the parents, most of the time, they're working low-pay jobs, and they may be working in the service sector, grocery store, or home health care facility worker, nursing home, things like that. And you got parents who have to do that to take care of their families, and they're going home after being in a high-risk situation in the public, and this is their job. And then they go home, and they may have COVID, and then it affects the grandparent or sometimes even the child. We were dealing with a lot of people who were making these really hard decisions, and it did affect them and their lives and their livelihoods. And some people, they did lose a parent or spouse. So this is Field Street. This is one side of the street that needs to be worked on. So that's vacant. This is vacant. This is vacant. So that's the only livable house. That's a nice.
I was in Detroit to report on District 5, an area of historic neighborhoods that runs east and west just north of the downtown area. I was talking with two organizations, Church of the Messiah on East Grand and Lafayette, and the Cass Community Social Services Organization on West Rosa Parks Boulevard.
So 2 years, we start filling in the vacant lots. There was a house here, but it just recently, last year, got torn down, so we don't own that land yet.
To all who know him, he's Pastor Barry. The very Reverend Barry Randolph has been priest at the Church of the Messiah for the past 18 years. His work helping people out of poverty landed him in the 2019 class of Michiganians of the Year. In a mostly older, rich, white denomination, this Episcopal congregation is 60% Black males under the age of 30. As the cultural and assistance hub, the neighborhood turned to the church during the pandemic.
It went from, you know, us just giving, you know, 1,000, 1,500 meals to, you know, over 23,000 meals in 1 week. And the good thing about it is that we ran that race with endurance, and we had some people who was truly dedicated and understand the big picture. So it was more of a selfless type of thing, and we just kind of kicked it in overdrive.
It was something that I'm so glad that we did, but we did not expect the need to be as great as it was. And thank God that we worked with Eden Farms, Trader Joe's, Whole Foods, World Central Kitchen was amazing. And then we were working with other churches. So it was a good collaboration of people working together. The need has not stopped, but at least that coalition was there in the very beginning. It wound up being a lot, but I think we did pretty good with rising to the occasion. And there were a lot of other community groups and churches that was out there working with us. So it wound up being an incredible experience that I don't ever want to have to do again.
Associate Pastor Robert Olive and Pastor Barry remembered the early days of the pandemic. Whatever the neighborhood needed, the church delivered. Here's Dwight Roston.
What I saw especially was a large amount of people gather selflessly to help others. And like Robert said, this is regardless to whether we think you got COVID or not, we're going to bring the food to your house because right. We know that you need the food.
There is a quality I observed in Detroiters that can only be described as resilience. COVID brought the city to its knees, but when I visited in early October, I was struck by the hardiness and strength of these people who have seen so much misery during the pandemic. I got a hint of where their resilience may come from as we finished a tour of Church of the Messiah in what they call their Sunshine Room. Pictures line the walls and cover every surface, pictures of parishioners and others tied in some way to the church who have died. As Dwight Roston rattled off the names and stories of those remembered here, a truth emerged.
This is Hardy. Hardy used to be one of our members, and Hardy is one of the reasons why we do so much work as far as mental health is concerned. Hardy had a mental illness and pretty much got into an altercation with another person who didn't know he had mental illness, and the guy killed him.
This over here is Serena. Serena is Nikki Gender T. Andrina. It's her cousin. She was a victim of gun violence. The lady next to her is Paige Stalker. So Paige Stalker was not from this community or this congregation, but she was from Grosse Pointe. And in solidarity with their community, Pastor Barry led a march just to bring awareness to the fact that she had been murdered. So we keep her picture in our church as a memorial as well. Keon was another one who, he was a victim of gun violence, but he grew up in this church for a very, very long time. His mother and his father still come to this church.
In the Island View neighborhood of Detroit, COVID is not the only way to die quickly and alone. It is merely the most recent.
A lot of the people that I've known, whether it's been COVID or whether it's been something else in just this last year, who have passed away, none of them, with the exception of probably my great-granny because she was 89, none of them expected for death to be anything that they would be experiencing anytime soon. Yet when it comes, it's very quick and it's very abrupt.
For many Midwestern states, the graph of coronavirus cases looks like waves with several peaks. In Detroit, it looks more like a ski jump hill with a huge crest early in the pandemic and then a fairly flat line extending to now. Just like the rest of the Midwest, Detroit is seeing an increase in coronavirus cases as the weather gets colder and people move inside. But the curve is much flatter and nowhere near the devastating months of March and April.
Well, initially, there was just a humongous sense of grief because, once again, you know, if America gets a cold, Detroit gets pneumonia. And we thought, oh, this cannot be happening this way. But I can tell you, I've never been prouder to work with folks who immediately took this seriously and decided that we were not going to be the poster child for not handling this right. One of the sort of controversial things that has just driven me mad is that people think that if you do have something that you are living with that, you know, makes you a weaker person, that when you get the coronavirus, then you are not considered a COVID victim, as if, you know, well, you were going to die anyway. That's not the case. It's very horrible for people to think that way. But that was what happened to us early, where we had a lot of people who were not 100%. So when COVID struck them, we had more deaths than you might have in other cities.
Rochelle Riley is the Arts and Culture Director for the City of Detroit. She makes an important point. Officials took the virus seriously early, and despite suffering devastating losses, they were unified in their response. They respected the virus and came together to fight it. Riley says it's the reason Detroit's coronavirus curve peaked early and has stayed relatively flat, while other cities and states have experienced several peaks and face a bleak winter season ahead. If you take the John C. Lodge Freeway from downtown to the opposite end of District 5, take the Webb Street exit and go south to Rosa Parks Boulevard, you come upon a brick building with a small sign proclaiming it as the home of Cass Community Social Services. That's where I met Faith Fowler, who's been executive director for over a quarter century. If you want to talk to Fowler socially distanced outdoors, you have to be patient.
To launch in the middle of a pandemic that is cleaning out homes and offices for both people who have had the pandemic, but also for people no longer occupying their cars with loud radios. It'll just take a second. Welcome to my hood.
Cass serves the poorest of the poor, which prompted them to create a unique memorial for COVID victims.
So this is the park we created. The nice thing about the park is that there's a campfire and horseshoes and swings, and we do picnics out here. But on that corner over there, you'll see a fence, and the fence has little bits of like colored glass in it as if it's stained glass, and that's our memorial park. During the pandemic, we've had two memorials out here for people who have died. So folks can spread ashes of their loved ones. Most poor people get cremated instead of buried. And so there's no expense to people. And it creates a place for folks to go to mourn and to be together outside, which is obviously safer.
Tears shed over the ashes of a loved one in a place meant for laughter and picnics. You get a lot of that in Detroit right now. Deep sorrow ever present among the details of daily life.
Now I'm here to tell you, I've never been so proud of our staff, because they kept coming. They were pulling extra shifts. They were doing dirty jobs. They had family members who were dying. They came the day of their death. They came after their death. Now they couldn't visit in hospitals or have funerals, but still I've lost family members, and I'm not sure I would have had the heart, the will, the soul, the gumption, the reserves to come and serve others the way they did, and yet they did.
I wanted to finish my reporting on District 5 on a high note, and I found one in the form of visual artist Mary Arrow, who lives in Grosse Pointe now, just north of Detroit, but there is an ongoing tie to District 5 in her story. I caught up with Mary via Zoom on a special day.
It's so nice to meet you, and happy birthday, I understand, is in order.
91 today.
Mary is an accomplished professional artist who often uses found objects in her work. Mary's daughter, Karen Shepherd, was in the room when Mary described how that practice of taking objects home to paint had an unfortunate consequence a couple of years ago.
I was going to do one of medium-sized rocks, and that's how I had my automobile accident. I had the rocks, in the back of the car, and I didn't bring them in at the end of summer. One of them gradually worked itself forward under the brake. I came up to an intersection. I could not stop. There were two cars in front of me. I zoomed around them, across the intersection, and into a house. That stopped me from painting for a while.
No one was seriously injured in the accident, but Mary stopped painting until, and here's where the District 5 tie comes in, a woman named Beth Sutherland saw Mary's painting of a crushed can one day and told her she liked it. Beth is a nurse at Henry Ford Health System.
This winter, my daughter had a party at her house for doctors and nurses were there. One of the nurses loved my beer can painting. So I was so pleased that somebody liked my artwork. So I got my paints out again and painted her a picture of her favorite beer can, which was Bud Light. And then COVID came along, and I began to think about the trash that might be, what kind of trash would be out there with COVID. People were going on walks a lot, and then my family was going on long walks, and I said, well, if you see any interesting cans, pick them up for me. So they did that, and they found all kinds of things. This was a cigarette package, Pepsi can, Red Bull, Corona, Doritos. So these were the kind of things people were bringing back to me to paint.
According to Karen Shepherd, Henry Ford is considering displaying Mary's COVID objects series in the hospital. And at 91 years old, Mary is taking photos now of doctors and nurses for possible paintings in a new series of Pandemic Heroes. After the year we've had, I think we're all rooting for her to do it.
In episode 3, journalists Judith Ruiz Branch and Carly Goldenberg, contributors to WNIN's bilingual podcast, Que Pasa Midwest, bring us stories of essential workers in Chicago during the pandemic.